Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. This week is a little bit different just because of how we had to break up the interviews. We've got two interviews this week with the filmmakers, the creators behind the new indie found feature Phoenix Forgotten, which is actually pretty darn good. So if you have a chance to check it out, if you like found footage movies, you might enjoy this one. It's done a little bit differently. The documentary style is very compelling and believable, and there is an emotional connection, for me anyway, with the characters and the story being told that I honestly had never managed to connect like that with the characters of other found footage features. So this is me saying, yeah, you might like this one. But I apologize ahead of time. The audio for director Justin Barber's segment is a little sketchy in places. Fortunately, the connection for co-writer T.S. Nolan is a lot better. So even though there are some drops during Justin's conversation, you can still mostly make out what's going on. I do apologize, but I didn't think it would be fair to leave his entire conversation out because there are some cool tidbits in there. Just wanted to let folks know that technically I'm still in a mobile situation. I'm not sure exactly where I'm going to be week to week, but all of you supporting the show through Patreon, your pledges are keeping everything in their standard locations, while literally the only thing moving about is me. If you want to add your pledges to that, if you're not already a patron, that's over at patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Every little bit helps, and yes, people who support the show do get little bonuses from time to time. We are going to have a few more additional tidbits later on for supporters. Since I'm here in San Diego, starting to do a lot of stuff with Mysterious Galaxy, so you'll see some extra interviews coming along for Writers After Dark. And given how long it takes me to find a settled place and some decent theme music, you're gonna see a podcast over at Writers After Dark. I can't help myself, so. But this will still go on, even if I have to use a Wi-Fi hotspot from a library or something to record my audio or edit any audio I record. But right now, we'll get to the interviews with the makers of Phoenix Forgotten. First up is Justin Barber, and after him, we have T.S. Nolan, and we'll see you on the other side. Hi, my guest right now is Justin Barber, the co-writer and director of the new sci-fi horror found feature, Phoenix Forgotten. Welcome to the show, Justin.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Now, Phoenix Forgotten is, like I said, a found footage feature horror sci-fi mix that is actually based on or around an actual event, the Phoenix Lights sighting back in 1997. What inspired you and your co-writer T.S. Nolan to focus on that event?
Well, I was in high school at the time of the actual Phoenix Lights in 1997, and it was such a big story. I grew up in Florida. It reached us all the way on the East Coast, and I've just always remembered it. It's just sort of a cool urban legend of the American Southwest. And it's one of the kind of the biggest, most witnessed found footage format worked really well for these characters and the stories. I mean, to bring some authenticity to set it against a real world event. And the Phoenix Lights is the one that was the most prominent in my mind. And also just because of where it took place, being in Phoenix, Arizona, the desert, it's just, we saw an opportunity to make a cool, iconic desert utility. It presented a lot of opportunity for suspense.
And how easy or how hard was it to research what you wanted to do? Because this was a widely publicized sighting. There have been books on it. It's been debunked. It's been re-undebunked. There's just so much discussion around this one event.
Yeah, I definitely put on my documentary filmmaker hat when we set the movie, and I edited all that material, and I watched the documentaries about it. But then I also went to Phoenix and I talked to real people, real eyewitnesses and experts who studied it. So there's definitely a lot of people out there willing to talk about it. It wasn't hard to find people willing to talk about the event who had seen it. The harder part was just trying to actually get to the truth of the matter. Some eyewitnesses I talked to seemed very genuine, and their story was very believable. You know, they described looking up into the sky, seeing this formation of lights that appeared to pass directly overhead. And although they could not make out the structure of this craft, it appeared to block out the star field behind it. So this black object with these points of light, it seemed to be a big object above them. Some people say football field wide, some people say a mile wide. But then other eyewitnesses I talked to, it was easy to tell that they were telling a tall tale. The story sort of evolved throughout the course of the interview. As I asked them different questions, the story kind of changed. So it's still, even me, on the other side of having done this project about Phoenix Lights, I still don't really know what went on that evening. And I don't know if we ever will know. There's just so much different information and different opinions out there about it. I think the photographic evidence is there. It's funny, the eyewitnesses seem to describe something different than what was photographed. The official explanation for the photograph and the video is that those are military flares shot from the military aircraft. And I actually think that's what the video of the event looks like. However, what people describe is very different. And through all my research, one interesting perspective I found was this guy who told me that he thinks that, yes, there was an alien crash that a lot of people saw, and yes, there was a flare drop, but the flare drop was meant to be a diversion, as a way of saying, look over here, don't look over there. So definitely, the waters are pretty muddy when it comes to the Phoenix Light.
Well, it sounds like you did a lot of digging. What guided the choice to make a fictional found footage out of it rather than just, another documentary, a real documentary?
Well, the found footage device we thought really worked really well for this particular story and this particular character. It's a story about a kid who films the UFO sighting, and then this is the event that kind of causes him to sort of catch the bug, that sets him on this path to find out what it was, and then also to film it again. He's on a journey to capture more evidence on camera. So with that in mind, being about the story of the character, it's a good opportunity for a found footage movie where it's really justified, as opposed to just say like a found footage movie about time travel or a found footage movie about any other subject. The camera really is integral to what the people in the story are going through and trying to achieve. And then also just great opportunities for suspense. There's a cool limited perspective that is cool about the found footage genre. You experience things exactly as the characters do without cutting away to other things. And that can make it really scary. Just the nature of UFO hunting in general, I guess. You need to have a camera in your hand if you're on that quest.
Now, are there any other urban legends or unexplained sightings that you have lined up for your next project?
Early stages, but I am drawn to all that material. I've definitely become more skeptical as I've gotten older. I guess I say it this way. When I was younger, I was a lot more like Bob Mulder, and now that I'm older and more like Bill Scully, that I'm just more of a skeptic. But still, a few stories of the bizarre and the paranormal that captured my imagination. I guess just because, I just want to believe that the world is more fantastic and exciting than it is. But I'm certainly like a big follower of like the Bigfoot subreddit and urban legends and mythical creatures and that kind of thing. I just think there's I just want to tell stories about people trying to uncover the last bit of magic left in the world, I guess. But nothing I can specifically talk about right now. So
what sort of stories and legends capture your imagination? The mythical creatures, the evil aliens, or the benevolent aliens?
You know, actually, that hasn't come up yet as far as, I remember reading interviews with Spielberg really early on in his career where he said that he never wanted to make a movie about malevolent aliens because he really believed that they were good or he wanted to. But then all these years later, he ended up making that Lord of the Worlds movie. I guess I haven't really, I haven't really thought about it in that respect. I mean, personally, I guess I feel like I've seen too many alien invasion movies at this point. I don't necessarily have a story in me about that yet. I prefer these stories about making contact with alien species, and there's some other reason we need their help. I think maybe I am falling on the more optimistic end of the spectrum these days. Maybe it's because that's what I want to have happen. Another movie I love is Contact with Jodie Foster. We love the Mexican movie. Also, I thought Arrival was great from this last year. So I guess I'm more so drawn to those stories than I am, your Edge of Tomorrow movies. Although I thought that was great, actually, too. But otherwise, Bigfoot. I love going camping out in the wilderness. I live in Southern California. I love going out into the desert. And I'm just sort of a Bigfoot hobbyist these days because if you go out in the wilderness, you'll find people who will tell you their experiences. And there's just something fascinating about this creature that lives out there that we have yet to really document. But at the same time, it's fierce. It's scary. To hunt for a Bigfoot, you have to also accept that it could be dangerous. And so inherently, there's a good story to be told there, maybe.
Well, Phoenix Forgotten is in theaters April 21st. That's this weekend. Everyone should go check it out if the found footage sci-fi horror is up your alley. Definitely check it out if you're curious about UFOs. Thank you for your time today, Justin.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Hi, and welcome back. My guest now is writer T.S. Nolan, who has co-written Phoenix Forgotten, the new found footage feature about the Phoenix Lights incident from 1997. Welcome to the show, T.S.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So how did you and Justin connect to write this story?
It started for us as a conversation between me and my friend Wes Ball, who's one of the producers on the movie. The way I remember it, we were watching the movie Catfish back in 2011. I don't know if you're familiar with the movie, but we were debating whether or not it could be real, and we just thought it would be fun to bring that kind of authenticity to the subject matter of movies that we grew up on, like Close Encounters of the Third Kind or Poltergeist. And that's kind of where it started. And then we brought Justin on as someone who was an old friend of ours and someone that we knew we wanted to work with and had his own kind of style and approach. And we knew that he would run with the concept and make it his own. And around that time, I pitched the idea to Ridley Scott at Scott Free Films. And it turned out that it was something that he wanted to get involved with. And then everything just sort of snowballed from there.
Now, how did you get Ridley's attention to say, hey, I've got this movie about this UFO incident, Joanna?
Yeah, that was, I saw him on the street and I flagged him down and I couldn't believe that worked. Actually, the credit goes to his executives, the executives at his company. I think I was meeting with Michael Schaefer and with Alicia Holmes over at Scott Free, and I kind of mentioned the idea to them, and they thought it would be something that that he might want to get involved with, and so they kind of played matchmaker between the two of us and got me into a room with him. And I think he grafted onto kind of the emotional hook of the idea that it starts off almost as kind of a sentimental story about these three missing kids 20 years later, kind of examining the the impact of their disappearance on their families and their community and people who just want closure. And then gradually the story starts to take a little bit more of a sinister turn and goes in that horror movie direction in the second half as new information and new footage is uncovered that finally ultimately reveals a sliver of the truth of what actually happened to them. And, you know, for us to have him on board and to have just his stamp of approval, obviously he has such a legacy within the genre. It was a big confidence boost, I think, for all of us, you know, to make the movie feel real and not just a conversation among friends of like, oh, you know, wouldn't it be cool to kind of do this? You know, when he got involved, you just felt like, okay, well, we better make this movie now.
Now, how long was the writing process and from writing to production?
You know, like I said, our first conversation about this movie was back in 2011, 2012. And, you know, I was going back through my files the other day, and I have outlines and scriptments going back, you know, 5 or 6 years on this. And then but we always knew that we wanted to keep it relatively loose when you're centering a story around a real-life phenomenon like the Phoenix Lights, and you know going in that you're going to be incorporating as much real footage and real interviews and real people and real news clips as possible. That sets a bar of authenticity that the rest of the movie has to live up to. So we wanted to keep the writing process a little bit loose and allow it to be molded around the actual, you know, personalities of the actors that we cast. And because it's, you know, it goes in that kind of found footage direction, you know, it's relatively easy and relatively cheap, you know, to bring the cast back and, to get new footage later. And so it was a little bit of a process of shoot a little bit, throw it together, look at it, you see kind of what's working, what isn't, bring everybody back, shoot a little bit more, and just kind of let the movie discover, you know, what it wants and, you know, discover its own shape. Of course, Justin had a huge impact on the development of it as well. You know, I had the scriptment that I wrote, and then, you know, before he went off and shot it back in, you know, the first leg of the shoot in January 2016, he did his own pass on the material and flushed it out into, you know, something that he felt more comfortable shooting. So it was really kind of a collaboration, passing it back and forth between the two of us.
Yeah, Justin mentioned how fascinated he was by the topic. So his level of enthusiasm and research must have been a welcome addition.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, yeah, you want someone who's making the movie to be passionate about the movie that he's making. And what I liked the most was how passionate Justin was about the characters, particularly the kids. You know, we grew up, we were all kind of 90s kids. Like, we were all in middle school or high school when the Phoenix Lights came out. And so, you know, what Justin likes to say is that these kids are, he knew these kids when he was growing up. And I think that's a good accomplishment for the movie that these characters would feel like real people and not archetypes in a horror movie.
Now, was it initially scripted to go in the horror direction?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the gambit of the movie, that we would have this true crime approach, and it would be, you know, following the breadcrumb trail of evidence and all the clues left behind, and then gradually we would start uncovering new evidence and new footage of these kids shot as they went out of their little adventure, you know, trying to capture and document these strange events and these strange lights that people were seeing, you know, in the sky. And that new footage, basically, it's kind of the be careful what you wish for, you know, it reveals kind of the horror of what they went through out in the desert. So it was always the idea that the story would become a little bit more sinister as it went on, or to take that turn into horror territory rather than just being a horror movie from the very beginning that's trying to jump out and scare you every 5 minutes. But that was always, I think, structurally the idea and what drew us to it and made it feel like it was going to be different enough and stand out, you know, from the crowd of other found footage movies.
And the fact that this is a found footage movie around an event that so many people experienced when it was happening and obsessed over it afterwards, that must have added a level of believability and just more information to make the story richer.
Yeah, like hopefully the best case scenario is that it blurs that line of where reality stops and the fictional world of our movie begins. Because, you know, it was one of the reasons why we centered on the Phoenix Lights. We knew that we wanted the movie to be centered around an actual real-life UFO sighting. But the fact that the Phoenix Lights occurred over a densely populated metropolitan area so many people saw them, and there's actually footage that exists of these lights, of this formation of lights. And this is from a time, you know, when not everybody had a camera on their phone, but the footage is actually out there. So the fact that there is such a legacy to the Phoenix Lights, and that so many people saw them, you know, it's kind of cool to think that people might see the movie and then do their own research and come to their own conclusions and wonder kind of, you know, the hat trick of what's real or what isn't.
Now, did the writing or the making of the movie cause you to question some assumptions you had of the sightings or change your mind at all?
Well, it's interesting because we knew that we wanted a section of the movie to be about the skeptics, give the skeptics a voice in the movie, the people who say that, oh, it was just military flares or you know, this or that. And so there was a section we thought, okay, right here we're going to go into all the different theories, the real-life possibilities of what these lights might have been, you know, swamp gas, weather balloon. And, you know, what kind of jumped out at me was just how none of them seem all that credible, you know. And so that I think did make me question, you know, what the Phoenix Lights were, and that, you know, we couldn't find that really good, credible, skeptical explanation for what they were. Like, it's hard to imagine, you know, a flare drop where the flares are flying, you know, in perfect formation over a span of several hundred miles. Like, that just doesn't seem credible.
Yeah, and swamp gas in the desert, I don't think so.
Yeah, and the fact that the governor himself, I mean, this is something we put in the movie, the governor had a press conference, you know, after the lights were first seen, where he was basically mocking the idea that there was any kind of a cover-up or any kind of extraterrestrial activity. He had dressed up his either his chief of staff or his press secretary in a cheesy alien costume. And then years later gave an interview saying that not only did he see the lights that night, but that you know, he actually hadn't heard an explanation that he thought was credible either. And he had kind of launched his own little inquiry into what they might have been and was essentially stonewalled and didn't get an answer. And this is the governor, you know? So, yeah, we found that footage kind of pretty deep in the process of making the movie. And we just thought, wow, you know, it gave us the confidence, I think, that we chose the right subject matter for this movie.
Well, hopefully your film and the attention to detail that you paid in making it will encourage some other investigators to go do their own digging, and maybe the next generation will actually find an answer.
Yeah, at the very least, it's good publicity for us.
Well, thank you for your time today, T.S.
Thank you very much.
The movie is Phoenix Forgotten. It is in theaters April 21st. If you enjoy a little sci-fi horror with your found footage, definitely go check this one out. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you, wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa, the first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award, with weekly stories from the world's best authors, Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more, with news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pohl, Wolf, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
Hey guys, this is Arjun Gupta from Sci-Fi's The Magician. You are listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
So, like I said earlier, definitely check out Phoenix Forgotten. It is in theaters now. As of this weekend, April 21st, there's also a little featurette featuring Ridley Scott, who, as you heard in the interview, is one of the producers of this film. That link is over at collider.com. We'll have a link to it from the website here, sliceofscifi.com. Also, we had our own little contest for a prize pack for Phoenix Forgotten. The winner will get a run of engagement pair of tickets where they can see the film at any AMC theaters in the Phoenix metro area. They'll also get a t-shirt and a poster. I'm still waiting. Still waiting to hear back from the winner because we need a mailing address. Just plain and simple, we need a mailing address so we can send them the goodies. And that will not be the last contest we have, so be sure you check the Twitter feed, the website, for any contest news. I'm a little bit behind on updating those items on the Google Plus feed, simply because of lack of having a home base for the moment. But once I get settled someplace, that will start over again. We also have a new manager for the Facebook page, so hopefully we'll start getting some updates going over there. Yes, I know it has been left abandoned to the whims of internet fates, but who knows? We'll see some activity on that in the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned over there. If you like Facebook more than Twitter, I don't understand why, but I'll go with it. But that will do it for this episode. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in. The number is still 602-635-6976. Go ahead, leave a voicemail, ask a question, leave a comment, whatever your heart desires. I'm actually not sure if there's a time limit on there, so go for it. Surprise us all. You can listen to the show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, and on Krypton Radio. Feel free to subscribe at any of those places and give a listen to the show. You can leave a review for us over on iTunes and on Stitcher. So if you're enjoying what you're hearing, please leave us a good review. Let other people know that this might be something they'd enjoy too. Check us out on Twitter. It's at Slice of Sci-Fi. Check us out on Google Plus and YouTube. We're Slice of Sci-Fi over there. And of course, the websites, sliceofscifi.com, sliceofscifi.tv, writersafterdark.com, and yes, popculturegeeks.com. You'll want to keep an eye out for Pop Culture Geeks because people who are fans of the series Painkiller Jane will be interested to know we've got an interview with Kristanna Loken coming up soon. She's in a new action thriller called Black Rose. So, yeah, I think you'll have fun with it. I know I did. Everyone, thank you again for your patronage and your support. If you are not currently supporting the show and you want to chip in your nickels and dimes as well, the place to do that is over at Patreon, patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Thank you very much, because everyone who supports, your pledges, your donations do help support the show here. Keeps the websites online, keeps the media online, and it's one less moment of stress in my daily life. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you all. I'd also like to thank my friends in the geek rock band Sci-Fried for their music here. I honestly don't know if words can truly express how grateful I am. The job they did, they took my instruction and said, this is the sound I want. This is kind of what I'm looking for. You know what you did in this song over here? Give me something to pick from. And they nailed it. They did a awesome job. And if you like what they've done, check out their other music. They do have an album coming out later this year, so we will hear from them again, hopefully soon. Their website is sci-fried.com. And if you do pick up one of the free songs or buy one of their albums, tell them Summer sent ya, okay? Oh, thank you very much for listening. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi, I hope next week, but I'm not sure. Either way, take care.